What's up, Raptors Nation? I'm Chris Charisma, back at it once again. This is, I'm not sure. Well, yeah, I guess you could call it Season 2. Let's call it Season 2. Episode 1 of the Raptors Rundown. Sixth episode in total, I think. Preseason finally wrapping up last night in front of a great crowd in Montreal. And speaking of Montreal, I have someone on the Raptors Rundown whose voice is quite familiar with the Montreal airwaves, James Borbis of the Dino Nation blog. How is it going, man?
It's going all right, and you know how you know that you've really established yourself and stuff like that?
What?
You forget what number it is.
Yeah.
You don't know after a while.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I've done the starting five. I don't know how many starting fives there's been. I have lost count, so,
yeah.
You know. Although some people do that, though. They're big with the numbers. The Basketball Jones, I'm sure people are familiar with.
Yeah, episode 4, Hunt. Like, yeah.
So yeah, they're starting their television show. Good luck to those guys, by the way. That'll be in a few days, so
very excited
for them. And but me, I've never been one to count the episodes. So.
Yeah, but for me, I like seeing the number.
That's right. You can physically see how much you've worked, so that's good.
It's a nice gauge. But yeah, great. And not only is it another season of Raptors basketball and TBJ, it's also another season for DNB, the Dino Nation blog. How is it going over there?
Hey, it's going all right. We're almost to our third anniversary, 3 years of doing this, and it's been a lot of fun, and we've come a long, long way. I mean, I actually have a person on staff now. We never had that before.
Uh-huh.
Danielle DeGraw does her features on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and whenever else she can help me out and fill in, she does that and does a great job with it. And, you know, we have access to the Raptors. First year, we did that last year.
Uh-huh.
Doing that again this year. Didn't get out to camp this year because, obviously, in Vancouver, the DMB budget does not afford flights to Vancouver, unfortunately. So we missed out on camp, but got down for a few preseason games, and it's a lot of fun. I enjoy what I'm doing, and I feel fortunate to say that, you know, it's got to the point where I can actually, you know, make a couple dollars doing this, which is a thrill.
No, yeah, it sounds fun. And Raptor fans, if you haven't checked it out, what are you guys waiting for? I don't know if James will admit it with me, but it's easily the most popular Raptors blog on the internet. Always a good read, so check that out.
I don't know if we're the most popular, but we do try and do as much as we can. And I think the biggest strength of the Dino Nation blog, as opposed to what everyone else does, and everyone else does a fabulous job. I don't want to get competitive here and you know, say, well, we do this. But the one thing, when I do look at the Dino Nation blog, I think the one thing that we do the best, or hopefully as good as anybody else, is the fact we do interviews and talk with people. And that's why having access has been so great, to actually be able to physically get in there and talk with the players. And we talk with Jack Armstrong, Matt Devlin, Eric Smith. All those people have been so kind with their time and to get to know me and build relationships with me. And hopefully it turns out to be something that's interesting for fans. And I try and do it from an approach of, if I was a fan, what would I want to hear from those people? Like, when I'm talking with Jack Armstrong, what do fans want to hear from Jack? You know, not what I want to hear from Jack necessarily. So that's the goal. And hopefully we do a good job of accomplishing that.
Yeah. Well, you do. I do. I mean, I think I've mentioned this to you before. The reason why I got into it was because of your blogs. I mean, all more props to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. And there was you, and there was another person who, the first blog they did, they actually gave me credit, and I was like, that was one of those moments in, like, the 3 years of doing this that I kind of took a step back and said, wow, you know, like, people are actually, you know, inspired by what I'm doing or pay attention to what I'm doing to the point that it's got them interested in doing it themselves or getting involved in it themselves. And I think that's great. I mean, I went to school. I got a journalism background and all of that. And, you know, whether you be young or old, hey, covering sports is not the worst thing in the world you could do for a living.
Yeah.
It's not the easiest thing to get ahead and actually get somewhere and get a job in that. But if you can be fortunate enough to pull that off, it's not a bad way to make a living.
No, not at all. But let's get into the topic that we all have in common, the Toronto Raptors. Preseason finally wrapping up last night. And like I said, a great crowd in Montreal against the New York Knicks. It's as close as a preview of the home opener as you're going to get. Let's get into the player aspect of things. Ever since Colangelo arrived onto the scene, it's almost been like, I guess you'd call it a revolving door in the locker room. Every single year, it almost seems like there's a handful of new players. This year is not an exception. Now, you have Joey Dorsey, Ed Davis, Alibi, Barbosa, Klaza, Anderson, among them. Which one of the newer players have you been most impressed with this preseason?
Well, Joey Dorsey, we should say, he had a cup of coffee last year, so he's technically not new.
That's true.
Just to be technical about it. But I think the two major guys, when you look at what they did in the offseason, are Klaza and Barbosa. A lot of people have been impressed with Klaza. I tend to lean to Barbosa. I think Barbosa is going to have a big impact on this team, and I think he can really do a lot of things and do them well for this basketball team. And I like his speed, and I like the fact that he's developed a pretty good chemistry with Jared Jack over the preseason. And I think when you look at him, it was just a case of, in Phoenix, he didn't really have a great relationship from Alvin Gentry, from what people say. And he had a down year personally, had some family issues in that. So it wasn't that he deteriorated as much as a basketball player. It was just he had an off year with some other issues. So I think he'll bounce back and on a Raptor team where he's going to get more of an opportunity than he ever got in Phoenix. So I'm really excited about him of all the new guys. The one guy I didn't expect hardly anything from, and to be bluntly honest about it, didn't know a heck of a lot about, was Anderson. I think he's been a pleasant surprise in the sense of I really didn't expect much. He was a lot like, for me, he was a lot like a guy like Sonny Weems. Didn't really know a lot about Sonny when he first came here. Didn't know what to expect from him, quite honestly. And with Sonny, it was just over the top amazing the season that he had last year. I'm not saying Anderson's going to be that good. But same kind of thing, a guy who is a real under-the-radar guy, even for someone who follows the NBA closely. And, you know, he comes here, gets an opportunity, and has made the most of it so far.
Aside from Anderson and Barbosa, and you mentioned the whole Sonny Weems situation, you know, at the end of the year, when we look back on the season, you know, which one of those moves are we going to compare most to the Amir and Sonny acquisition?
I don't know if any of them are necessarily comparable. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the case of, like, that trade was just unique in the sense of the Raptors really didn't give up anything to get Amir and Sonny. In the sense, you had Delfino, who wasn't even part of the Raptors. He was over playing in Russia, so he was just someone who they had the rights to. And then you had Roko Ukić, who, let's be honest, rarely played for the Raptors, and when he did, was not effective and was not looking like a guy who was going anywhere. And guess what? He's not in the NBA anymore. He's back over in Europe, so there was something to that. And in what they got Amir Johnson and Sonny Weems, who a year later are both guys who are in your rotation. That's about like as massive a win as you can get in a trade. That isn't like a total steal, like a Paul Gasol from Memphis to LA kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the ultimate goal in a trade is you want to get assets that are in your rotation that do better than the assets that you gave up. And I think in that trade, absolutely, that's the case. Now, with Barbosa, I personally think Barbosa will outplay Turkoglu this year. I think Hidu is the same Hidu that was in Toronto. And going to Phoenix hasn't changed much. I mean, his attitude and the way he played in the last game in Toronto was typical Hidu Turkoglu, and that's why people were booing him in Vancouver and booing him in Toronto. And that's why anytime he steps into this country, he'll be booed.
He's gonna get it. He's gonna get it for a while from us. Moving from the batch of newer players to two Raptor individuals who the fan base are quite familiar with, Jose Calderon and Andrea Bargnani. Their struggles during preseason have already been well documented. Jose finally bouncing back last night against the Knicks. Bargnani having a better couple games, but inconsistency has always been the issue with him. Let's start off with Jose. Aside from last night, which was clearly a bounce-back night, what's going on there? I mean, is he still injured? Is he hurt mentally from because of the trade talks that went down with Charlotte over the summer? Or, I don't know, what is it with Jose right now?
I don't know if he's hurt necessarily mentally. I think what it comes down to is Jose just hasn't... He had that point where he was the hottest thing since sliced bread with Raptor fans, and it's been down ever since. And part of that is how the league has started to change, because at about that same time, the NBA started getting these quick, athletic point guards. Derrick Rose, Tyreke Evans. We got John Wall coming this year. Other guys like that, all fast, all quick, all guys who can easily take Jose Calderon off the bounce. And that's what it comes down to for Jose Calderon. Defensively, he's a liability. He's always going to be a liability. And even when he was good, he was that. But now there's more people in the league that can take advantage of that. And you add in the fact that his offensive game, which was spectacular at the time that some fans were calling him a potential Eastern Conference All-Star, that offense has dipped down and dropped off. And you mentioned he's had some injuries, he's had some issues. And I think it's just been a steady decline, whereas Jared Jack came into this team last year and I think outplayed Jose on the floor, and I think off the floor, he's been more of a leader than Jose has been in his whole entire career as a Raptor. I mean, Jose's a great guy and he's a great person, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a great leader. And I mean, the same issues get talked about when you talk about Chris Bosh. Some people didn't feel Chris Bosh was a good leader, but he is a good guy. I know he went to South Beach, and I know a lot of people are not happy about that, but Chris isn't a bad person for doing that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean he was a leader, and that doesn't mean that everything worked out well for him in Toronto. I think a lot of those things can apply to Jose Calderon as well, because, I mean, he's been a great guy. He wants the team to do well. He's been a team player for the most part in his time here and accepted his role, whatever it is, starter, backup, and all that. But at the end of the day, I think it's just his defense and how the league is changing makes that even more of a problem. On a night-to-night basis, you can't always rely on Jose Calderon to be in there to defend for this team. I mean, we saw some brilliant examples of that in the preseason. He had to face Rajon Rondo twice. Didn't do too well.
Yeah.
Derrick Rose didn't do too well. These are the type of guys that Jose Calderon just can't guard. And Jared Jack, not that he's a great defender, but he can do a better job on the defensive end. And ultimately, even in last night's game, Jared Jack didn't have the same offensive numbers as Jose Calderon, but he got four steals. Mm-hmm. I don't have the stats in front of me or anything, but I can't remember a game where Jose Calderon has ever had four steals, preseason, regular season, or otherwise.
Yeah.
That's the type of thing that Jared Jack brings to the table that Jose doesn't.
Now, with Andrea Bargnani, I know it's just preseason. Well, preseason wrapped up, but I did some stat digging, and he's having, or he had the worst preseason. He's basically had his worst preseason ever. He managed to clock in career preseason lows in field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and if you don't count last night's game, three-point percentage, as well as his lowest scoring average since his rookie year. Now, Bargnani's not the greatest rebounder in the world. We all know that, and most, if not everyone, would peg shooting as his biggest strength. Now, if he's not scoring well, if he's not doing that well, what does that mean for the Raptors, and do you expect this kind of struggle with on the offensive end to kind of carry over into the season now that Bosch is gone?
It absolutely will, because there's going to be a learning curve for him. I mean, some people feel that, oh, he can snap through this learning curve fairly quickly. I don't. I mean, people are going to double-team Andrea Bargnani now. When you think back to Andrea Bargnani playing without Chris Bosch, I don't have the numbers again in front of me, but the numbers probably aren't that good if you go research them, because he just wasn't able to deal with double teams and all those things that come when you are considered the quote-unquote best player on the floor. He's never had to deal with that in the NBA. So I think that's going to take some time for him. I think, you know, it's also a case of this team has to trust and believe in him too, because it's on the team as well to get him looks as well, because he is, I guess, the best scorer on this basketball team for a lot of people, so you've got to get him his touches and stuff like that. But if he doesn't handle double teams well and he turns over the ball or he takes bad shots or makes bad passes out of double teams, people aren't going to be as apt to give him the ball in situations. Now, near the end of the preseason, you started to see them look to Bargnani more.
Yeah.
There was the Sixers double overtime game where there was one stretch, either the first part of the first overtime or it was the second overtime, but three straight possessions, the ball went into Bargnani and he scored. And that was good. But at the end of the day, regardless of how he does on offense, people are going to judge him by his defense, and that is really a mess. I mean, to the point that Jay Triano was asked yesterday, or I think it was yesterday or the day before that, has Andrea Bargnani improved as a help defender? And his simple answer was no.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got a – that's a problem. That's a concern. I mean, this is a Raptor team that wants to play better defense and probably has to play better defense. And we already talked about Calderon's liabilities as a defender, and that's cost him his starting job, and rightfully so. I'm not saying it should cost Andrea Bargnani his starting job, but you've got to deal with that in some way. And he's got to own up to that and play better. And look, I mean, one rebound in 23 minutes, and you've got a guy like Reggie Evans playing 20 minutes and getting 11. I mean, that's a glaring stat. I'm not saying that Andre is ever going to be like Reggie. And Reggie's never going to score like Andre on the opposite end of that argument. But somewhere along the line, he's got to get some consistency where he gets in there and gets a few rebounds and battles and helps out. Or even if he gets that one rebound, but he boxed out and you could see that he helped other people get rebounds, I'd be okay with that. But that's not what we're seeing. So it's a case of, you know, he's never, ever going to be a 20-10 guy. But it would be nice if we could see a little bit of effort. And we don't want him to be a 20-1 guy, I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think they showed a graphic last night comparing him and Amari, and he had that one rebound.
And he stuck on that one rebound the whole entire night. Amari, not the greatest rebounder either, but
yeah.
I mean, if at certain points in times Amari is able to get rebounds. And I mean, I don't think if anyone's expecting Andrea to be a 20-10 guy, they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what he's going to be. But we do expect more than 20-1 or 20-2 or whatever silly number he's putting up there.
Yeah.
And it wrongly or rightly, he gets pegged as a lazy guy because of this, because people equate rebounding with effort. And if you look back through the history of basketball, all those guys that are like fan favorites who might not have been the greatest players in the world, The one thing they usually all have in common, they rebound the basketball. Guys like, I'm not a fan of him, but Dennis Rodman rebounded the basketball, played defense. Here in Toronto, he had the JYD, rebounded the basketball. You know, any guy you can think of like that, there's always rebounding in there because rebounding, for whatever reason, is the biggest thing that fans equate with effort. If you're in there, you're battling on the boards, and you're getting rebounds, fans see that. Fans see that as effort. And with Andrea, you don't see that, and you rarely see that.
Yeah, now that Bargnani is, like you said, quote-unquote, the best player on the team, you know, a lot more attention is going to be placed on him. A lot more articles are going to be written about him. One of the articles recently that caught my eye was written by StackMac, a.k.a. Holly McKenzie. And basically the article revolved around Reggie Evans' thoughts on Andrea Bargnani. And it went into the leadership aspect of things, team chemistry. Now, can Bargnani be that leader that most Raptor fans expected out of Bosch but felt like maybe they didn't get? Can Andrea bring both aspects of the leadership to the table? Can he be that lead by example kind of guy that maybe Bosch was, but can he also be that vocal guy that apparently Bosch wasn't?
I don't think so. Like because you're kind of putting carts before horses in a sense, because you also had an article, and I forget who wrote this one, but there was the article where it was an interview with Sonny Weems, and they were talking about how Andrea, they were on the bus going somewhere, and Andrea comes to the back of the bus and kind of hangs out with the guys and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he's getting better at that, and he's trying to, but I think, I mean, if we're doing that at this point in his career, to go from, oh yeah, Andrea's now one of the guys, to Andrea's the leader of the team, that's a big step. I don't think that's going to happen, at least not this season, and probably not in a couple of seasons. And when you even go further with that, and I mean, some people are going to get upset about this, and I don't mean to upset anyone by it, but there's not too many teams that have a European leader who comes from Europe and is like someone who's kind of embraced the English culture and the North American culture and had to learn it. There's not too many guys like that. I mean, there's Dirk Nowitzki. That's the only name that jumps out to me. He hasn't exactly set the world on fire with success with Dallas. But beyond that, I can't think of a person who's necessarily led a team and been the leader. And I think you've seen over the summer, the fans, who have the fans embraced it? It hasn't been a Bargnani. It's been the guys who are going to have a press conference announcing their new website, the Young Guns. It's been Amir. It's been Sonny. It's been DeMar, because they're up front. They're out in front of things. And the other disadvantage is, every summer, where's Bargnani going to be? He's going to go back home. He's going to play for Italy. He's going to be in Europe. Where were the Young Guns this summer? They were in Toronto. They were doing stuff in the city. They were around. Whereas Bargnani, it's not so much. So there's a lot of issues with... I think Andrea never will be the face of the franchise. I don't think that happens for him. But he can be a good player and a part of a winning team if he does the things that people expect him to do or want him to do. Mm-hmm. But it's not that there isn't a clear next one. That's the whole thing with this season. And we can talk about other guys who potentially could have been that next one and why they're not too. But it's a case when the Raptors, in their history, when one guy's left, there's always been someone else there. When Damon Stoudemire left, just after that, they drafted Vince Carter. Mm-hmm. When Vince left, Chris was already here. When Chris leaves, there isn't really that defined guy. And people point to Bargnani because there's no one else to point to, but I don't think he's that guy. And the only other guy that a few people would point to is DeMar. And DeMar could be that guy, but he's young, and he's got a long way to go. So, I mean, I don't think he's there yet either. So it's a case of, I don't think, a lot of times in this whole succession thing that's gone on with the Raptors, it's been their choice to make this move. Chris Bosh made this choice. The Raptors were not set up for Chris Bosh to leave.
Uh-huh.
They put all their eggs in the basket and hoped that they could keep Chris Bosh. And it didn't work out. But they weren't set up to say, okay, if Chris goes, no problem. This guy's going to be the next guy. They weren't. And, I mean, that's just the simple reality of it.
Now, the next thing I want to go into, we've already mentioned his name a couple times already. I know you're a big fan of his. Reggie Evans, it appears he's got that starting spot locked down. You know, you go on the forums, you discuss this on the internet, on Twitter. Is this more of a showcasing situation for a potential trade, or, you know, has Reggie Evans just basically earned that spot?
Well, I mean, Reggie's always going to have his contract that will be part of the mix.
Mm-hmm.
With having an expiring contract, it makes you very tradable, and it's just going to be a reality of things. That being said, the thing about Reggie, and I think a lot of fans got down on Reggie, and I understand that. But what some people might not have understood about last year, Reggie never had a major injury in his entire career. And, I mean, this was something new for him, and this was something that he had to learn to rehab, to get right, and to kind of fight through all this. And he's such a competitive guy by nature that must have killed him to have to sit for like half a season and not play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this season, from the start, we're starting to see the Reggie Evans that we saw before he came to Toronto, and this is the guy that Brian Colangelo wanted. Not the most offensive skilled guy in the world, never going to set the world on fire with scoring. That's not his thing. And if Reggie Evans is getting more than 6 or 7 touches a game, something's gone drastically wrong. But he gets on the boards, he will fight, he will rebound, he will claw, he will do all those nasty things. He will put the hard foul that's required when it's required. He will do all of those things for this basketball team that they sorely need. I mean, there's not a lot of quote-unquote tough guys on the Toronto Raptors. There just isn't. When Chris was here, and since he's left, they haven't necessarily toughened up. I mean, some people say Clay's is a tough guy. Yeah, he is, but, I mean, to a point. And Reggie can be one of those guys, too. Whereas last season, because he was injured, I don't think you got to see enough of that from him. And it'll be interesting, because if he plays like the Reggie Evans that he was before he came here, he will be an attractive piece for other teams, but it'll also be an attractive piece for the Toronto Raptors, because this is a team that we talked about Andrea Bargnani's rebounding struggles.
Yeah.
Do they really want to give away probably their best rebounder on the roster right now? I mean, I'd be hard pressed to find anyone else who rebounds better than Reggie on this team right now. So, do they really want to give that away when rebounding potentially could be a problem for this team? I'm not sure if they do. It all depends on how this season shakes out, because ultimately we're going to reach a point where reality is going to set in one way or the other.
Uh-huh.
And this team will either be playing for the future or they'll be playing for this season. Most people feel they'll be playing for next season. So if that's the case, then yeah, maybe you do make a move for Reggie Evans if you get the right pieces back and what you want out of a deal.
Right now, moving from Reggie Evans, Andrea Bargnani, Jose Calderon, to three other Raptor individuals who just happen to be all over the tickets, all over the programs, basically on every Raptors ad you can find in the city.
The Dance Pack? Wow, that's cool.
The Dance Pack. The Young Guns, or as they're referring to themselves now, the Young Ones. DeMar DeRozan, Sonny Weems, and Amir Johnson. Now, what would constitute a good season for them?
I think with each one of them, it's kind of different. I think for Amir, I think eventually the Raptors, given what they invested in him, even though he's probably not going to start the season as a starter, they hope that he's their starting power forward by the end of the season, unless they acquire an actual center somewhere along the line, and then Andrea Bargnani maybe becomes your four. But assuming we stay with situation normal and Andrea's your five, I think you want to see Amir be your starting power forward by the end of the season. I think you also want to see him stay on the floor because foul trouble is a huge issue for Amir. We saw a little of that at the end of last season. And those games, when he stayed out of the foul trouble, he put up some serious numbers.
Yeah, is that more of a reputation thing, or is it just something? Is it just a habit?
I think it's both, because I think you have bad habits and you commit silly fouls, and then you get a reputation with the referees, and then because they think of you in that way, then maybe there's a close call that you don't get because of your reputation. It's kind of like an evil circle, if you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's like it starts with you because you are the one who initially creates the impression that the referees have of you. But then it kind of circles around. And if you change your ways, like you see the light, so to speak, and you've changed your ways, it takes some time for the referees to adjust. And the same can be said for a player that doesn't necessarily drive the basketball. People used to get on Vince Carter for the fact he never drove to the basket for year after year after a while. Well, then there'd be the odd game where Vince would, and he'd get hammered and there wouldn't be a foul call. Well, the reason being, because for 10 games before that, Vince never went near the paint, and then he wondered why he didn't get a call. It's the same sort of thing. It's got to be repetitive. It's got to be habitual.
Now, you know, we talked about Amir. Damar and Sonny, you know, two players who play the wing positions, have different approaches and styles in their game as of right now. What would be a good season for those two? What do they need to work on? What do they need to develop?
I think a lot of people talk about they want to see them be able to shoot long range. Mm-hmm. I personally don't. As long as they can make that shot, like as long as they're capable of making that shot, that's fine to me. But I don't want to see Sonny Weems out shooting three-pointers, and I don't want to see DeMar out shooting three-pointers. I think what both of them have is athleticism and the ability to get to the rim. And with that, you can draw a lot of fouls. No more Chris Bosh. You need somebody to be getting in the line. Those two guys are vastly capable of doing that. They proved that in Summer League, especially DeMar. DeMar lived at the line in Summer League. So I think you want to see them work on that and work on the being able to find different ways to get to the basket and be able to drive. So, you know, get better with their ball handling and stuff like that. And then I think just for DeMar more than Sonny, he's really got to develop his jumper and make that a more consistent part of his game because that'll help set up the drive for him. With Sonny, I think he's got an awesome mid-range game, and I think he should really just polish that up because there's not a lot of guys in this league that can play a seriously good mid-range game. There just isn't. There's guys who can shoot the three. There's guys that can drive. There's very few. If you watch an NBA game, just for 5 or 10 minutes, look at how few shots get taken maybe like at the foul line, about 2 or 3 feet in from the three-point line. You don't see a lot of them. And it's because it's one or the other. You've got athletic guys that want to slash and drive and slam the ball and get in the paint. Or you've got guys who are gunners that want to stand out there and shoot three-pointers.
from the young ones, I'm gonna keep calling them young guns for a while.
I think they still are the young guns until they tell me differently.
Yeah. From the young guns to another young Raptor, our rookie, the 13th overall pick out of UNC, Ed Davis. He's, in my opinion, perhaps the biggest unknown variable due to that wrist injury he had in his final year at North Carolina and now the meniscus issue. What can we expect from Ed Davis this year? I know personally I'm pretty excited to see him play. I know a lot of other Raptor fans are. But, I mean, what kind of year is Ed Davis going to have?
A long one, I think. Because, I don't think fans, even though fans stay engaged and they pay attention and all that, I don't think fans fully grasp how long it's going to take Ed Davis to get back up to speed. Because you mentioned it. He didn't play for UNC for, like, since January, right? So he didn't even finish his college year. Now, he played a little in summer league, didn't play the preseason at all, hasn't done anything in training camp at all, and he's got to learn an NBA system. So, flip the script back to a year ago. How good was DeMar DeRozan day one, game one? He was raw. Yeah. It took him a little while. And that was with a full training camp and with all the preseason games. Ed Davis is going to have to get into a game at regular season speed, which is different from preseason, and learn on the fly. That's going to be awfully, awfully difficult for him. And I don't know. I don't think a lot of people will agree with me. I wouldn't even be surprised if, even for a few games, you see him go down to the D League just to kind of get his way at some point. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I see that because it's so hard. The one thing that you hear from players all the time, and DeMar says this a lot when you talk with him about the difference between college and the pro game, the one thing they always say is speed. The speed from college to the pros is just a gigantic leap for these guys, not only offensively, but defensively. And that's going to be a tough, tough thing for Ed Davis to pull off. I mean, my view for Ed Davis this year, I don't have any expectations for him this year. I just hope that what happens this year, we can talk about him in a positive light for next year.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
I know that's very negative and wet blanket, but
it's a fair point.
It's hard to imagine that this kid can jump into, like, the analogy I would use is it would be like trying to jump into a car that's moving at, like, 50 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Go try that. Well, actually, don't go try that. That would be wrong. But if you were to try that.
This would be my last show.
Yeah, if you were to try that. It would probably be complicated and difficult for you.
No, I mean, the point that really stood out to me was possibly sending him down to the D League. I know if that ever happened, Raptor fans would go ballistic.
Well, they would see it as, oh, he's a failure, he's a bust. But that wouldn't be the case necessarily. It would just be a case of, this guy needs time to play. And he's not, like, the Raptors, the way they're constituted right now, they're actually okay at his position.
Uh-huh.
There's not really a big rush to get him in there. I mean, you've got Reggie is still here. You've got Amir is still here. Klaza can play his position as well at the four. So there's not a rush to get Ed Davis here and get him minutes. And if he's not going to be effective when he's out there, what good are you doing him or the team by putting him out there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm saying. Is if he doesn't prove that he can kind of learn on the fly, which the Raptors should be able to find out real quick, then I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to Erie for even like 2 weeks or something, get some minutes in, play about four or five games with the BayHawks, and just get his legs under him.
I can see it happening, especially with the logjam of minutes at the 4 and 5.
And the same thing could probably happen with Alibi as well. And it wouldn't be a question of is he a bust. It would just be a question of how many minutes did he really get to play in the preseason? Not a lot. Reason being, there wasn't a lot of minutes for him. If he goes down to the D League and plays for Erie, he'll get to play like 30, 40 minutes a night and just go nuts in the D League for a while and build up his confidence. I mean, because it's a lesser brand of competition in the D League, and you'll be able to do a bit more against D League competition than you will NBA competition.
All right, now we're just about wrapping up this 45, 50-minute-ish show. But before we do, I want to play a little game that I played with you the last time you were on here, a speedy Q&A session with James Borbis.
Did I pass last time?
I think you did.
Okay.
This is going to be more of a predictions kind of theme-based game.
Okay, so I'm going to ruin my own predictions for my own blog and do them here. I'm okay.
With that?
Yeah, why not?
All right. Well, first question. Who will lead the team in scoring this year?
Barbosa.
Who will lead the team in rebounds?
Reggie, if he stays.
Okay, well, I guess you kind of answered this next one. Will Ed Davis make the rookie sophomore game?
No.
Will DeMar DeRozan make the rookie sophomore game?
Yes.
Will any of the Raptors make the All-Star game?
No.
Which young gun or young one will have the higher scoring average?
It's either Sonny or DeMar. I'm going to go with DeMar, and then next time I'm down at the Raptor game, if Sonny ever hears this, I'm in trouble. So,
okay, now with Jack starting last night, that put him and Jose at 4 starts apiece for the preseason. Who starts opening night?
Jared, Jack, or I will go ballistic in the Dino Nation blog, and if I do, it'll be must read. It'll be really good. Trust me.
Well, we'll have to check that out if that happens. Next question, will Jose Calderon or Reggie Evans be traded this year?
I'm not sure on either. I know there's probably more of an appetite to trade Calderon than there is Reggie. That's what I'd say about it. Reggie is tradable more because of his salary than because of his play. Jose Calderon, it'll be tougher to trade him because the contract that he has, it's not an expiring contract, and it's a big contract, and I don't know if a team's willing to risk that on Jose. So it may end up being Reggie, but from the Raptors' point of view, I think it's Jose.
Fair answer, fair point. Over under on the amount of wins the Raptors get this season, and do they make the playoffs?
No to the playoffs, and probably the number you probably want to play around with is about 33. Like, if you're doing the whole gambling line thing, I would probably set it at 33. But personally, I think they'll be a little bit above that. But to make it like where people would be, where do I go, over or under, 33, 34 seems about the right number there.
Okay, now does Jay Triano make it through the season as head coach?
It's an interesting question. Jay's changed a lot. Like, this season, Jay, in his post-game press conferences, is a totally different guy from the guy we saw last year. And why that is, only Jay knows. I mean, I saw Jay do an interview, and he says, "I don't think I've changed." Well, go watch the tapes, Jay. You've changed. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's because he doesn't have a superstar to deal with anymore in Bosch, or it's just a case of he's really trying to maximize what he gets out of this. If Colangelo stays, though, I think he stays. And from every indication the Raptors have given, Colangelo is going to stay, although they still haven't put pen to paper on that, which is interesting.
Now, next question, seven seconds left in the game, Raptors down by 1, who do you go for? I mean, who do you go to for the game winner?
I don't know, and I think other teams won't know, and I think that's the beauty of this team. If you want to be optimistic about it. I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think they do either.
Last week, go ahead.
Oh, it's okay.
No,
I don't think there is a clear answer to that. Some people would say Bargnani, but I've never thought of him as a clutch guy. Mm-hmm. You've got lots of options with that. Jared Jack can be a clutch guy. Barbosa, it's interesting.
That's a positive way of looking at it. Last speed question. Raptors' first two games are at home against New York, and then 2 days later against Cleveland. Do we start off 2-0, 1-1, or 0-2?
They absolutely have to at least get a split. They have to go 1-1, or else it's going to be a long season if they don't. That's silly to say after just two games. But when you look at what's after that, which is that West Coast road trip, I think it's vital that they get one. I thought the Knicks were better than maybe what we saw last night. Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen. I think Cleveland's a lot better than people give them credit for. I think they'll do the 1-1. I think that's probably the logical answer. But these are two teams that if the Raptors, like if you're the optimistic person out there and you say, I want the Raptors to sneak in, get the 8th seed, the 7th seed, mm-hmm. they better go 2-0.
Yeah.
Because these are two teams that the Raptors just absolutely have to beat. Like if they're going to have any hope and prayer at the playoffs. Teams like New York, Cleveland, got to get those wins because I think we've seen in the preseason when they match up against like serious competition like Boston, Chicago, even when they're at their best, they're hard-pressed to compete with those teams. And that's going to be the case with all those big-name teams like L.A., like Oklahoma City, all those teams.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there you go. You guys heard it here first, DNB dropping some of their Raptors predictions for the 2010-11 season. James, thank you. Thank you again for stopping by.
No, it was fun, and you know, I hope I haven't bored people because this is a long time to be talking.
Yeah, but no, we stretched out well. That was good.
Yeah, I hope it worked out well for everybody. It was a pleasure to be back on your program. What was this, episode 6?
Episode 6, yeah.
And what was the other episode I was in?
I think it was 5. It was the last one. It was to wrap up the season last year.
So it's 5 and 6. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep a record now of which episodes I'm in. So when I'm bored and I want to listen to one, I'll listen to one I'm in.
There we go. It's always a pleasure, as you guys can tell. You guys can follow, if you're not already, that is, James on Twitter. Just look up at Dino Nation Blog, all one word. Check out dinonationblog.com. Always a good read over there.
Or video or interview or whatever that
video
works
interview,
for.
The works.
It is a multimedia platform where we try and make it to be.
Yeah. No, there we go. By the time this podcast is up online, I'm going to assume we'll be a day or two away from the home opener, Raptors versus Knicks. No matter how bad you think Toronto will do this year, the ACC is always packed with an electric atmosphere for every home opener. So make sure to catch that game. Once again, signing off, I'm Chris Charisma. You've been listening to the Raptors Rundown.
Go, go. Everybody run back to you.